CJ, we're just talking about the Seth Jones matchup with Austin Matthews, which was one of those games within a game, the story within the story, and the story was the Maple Leafs lose 2-0 at the hands of CBJ. The guys seem to think that there's a lot of positives if you're the Maple Leafs to take out of that game. Do you share that sentiment?
For sure. I mean, the only thing that isn't positive, of course, is it's a best of five series, and there's not a lot of time, and that's the same position, you know, all these teams are in that are playing these qualifying rounds. But, you know, I don't think there really was that much in the game last night to not like if you're a Leafs fan or part of their front office, you know, other than the result. I'm with Bourne. I think that, you know, if Nick Robertson scores early in the game, if Matthews is one off the crossbar or the one that Korpisalo save goes in, you know, if Toronto can get ahead in that game, I'm sure it plays out a little bit differently in terms of Columbus having to chase things a little bit more. And, you know, I think this is a series the Leafs were expecting, that it wouldn't be wide open 6-5 type of games, most likely, especially if there's as few power plays in the game as we saw last night. So, you know, the positives are Frederik Andersen looked pretty locked in, other than the one where he wasn't. And, you know, I think that they did create a few opportunities that I'm sure they'll be looking to get to the middle a little bit more and have more dangerous looks. But, you know, I think the Leafs feel if they play that same game again tomorrow afternoon, that you know, they'll have a pretty good chance of winning it.
Berkey?
CJ, the thanks for coming on with us, by the way. The fact that you can identify the three good scoring chances Toronto had, you can recall them and name them, and we're all checking them off in our minds as you do. The fact that you can identify the three prime scoring chances they had that didn't go in, and I know exactly the three plays you're talking about. Nick Robertson early, the crossbar, and then the one-timer in the third, I think it was, the Korpisalo saved. That's, I think, indicative of the fact that they didn't get enough quality scoring chances, and Matthews was great, but he needs some help, like Bourne said earlier.
Well, for sure. And I think, you know, if we see any adjustments, you know, it wouldn't surprise me maybe if the change comes in that top six and you move Marner back to Matthews' wing and have Nylander go with Tavares where you know, each of those lines were together for significant portions of the regular season and had some success. I mean, you might see a little mixing and matching that way because, you know, I'm sure if you're, you know, drawing this up from Toronto's end of things, you feel that your advantage is that you have not just one, but two first lines in theory. And I think you need both of them to be generating looks. It makes the matchup game a little bit less acute. And, you know, I do think, well, we like to focus on it. I mean, Austin still played more than half of his even strength minutes last night with Seth Jones and Zach Werenski not on the ice. So, you know, the two great chances that he had were actually, you know, both shifts where Jones and Werenski were, you know, getting rested on the bench. And so, you know, the value, the strength of the Leafs is if they can, you know, come at you in waves and not just rely on, you know, one or two of those players to be generating those chances. And I think, you know, you're going to see a little bit more emphasis on, you know, what Mitch Marner can give offensively, the Tavares, and, you know, perhaps the answer, you know, lies in them being split up.
Do you get the sense that the Leafs would be, I guess, quick to make changes? Is this sort of a, hey, let's see if game two plays out the same way? Or, you know, the potential changes that come to mind for me would be the Robertson-Engvall situation. Rasmus Sandin is not playing. How quick could a change like that be where you actually see a roster change, not just a line change?
I would think we'll see one tomorrow. And, you know, I can't tell you what it is. But, you know, just as you would know, Justin, from your time together and knowing Sheldon Keefe as well as you do, I mean, he's not a coach that seems to rest on, you know, get locked into a certain lineup and run with it too long. I mean, certainly in his time with the Maple Leafs, he's not been shy to juggle things around and move people in and out of the lineup. You know, I do think that you're likely to see Engvall come in. I don't know if it's as simple as taking Gauthier out or you know, where he'll slide in. But, you know, I would think given the nature of the, you know, how close the series is and how little time you have and really how important that game too is, that, you know, it's an important time for the coach, I'm sure, to preach, you know, okay, we just have to keep doing what we're doing and it's going to pay off. I mean, patience is part of this, but, you know, he's going to have to pull some strings as well to give the guys some confidence that you know, there's answers to be found here.
With Chris Johnston, not the best game Not the best performance by Cody Ceci yesterday, highlighted by a pair of penalties. Do you think there's any chance we see some movement there? Maybe Travis Dermott's playing with Morgan Riley again. Dare we say a Tyson Barry, Morgan Riley combination? Do we suspect of any changes at that level, CJ?
I think it's possible. It certainly seems as though the change that's been in the coaching staff's mind is to have Dermott on the right side beside Riley. You know, when they were assigned to the small group settings with the phase two back in June, that's something I know those guys were in the same group and that they worked on, and we saw it a little bit during the training camp phase here in the last few weeks. And so, you know, I could see that happening. And really, to me, other than that one puck that bounced over Dermott's stick and, you know, led to the decent chance there from Robinson, you know, I thought he had a pretty solid night. And so, you know, wouldn't surprise there. I don't know if we'll see a personnel change on the blue line. I certainly found it interesting that, you know, in the exhibition game when they had the option to dress seven defensemen, that it was Martin Marincin that was the seventh D on that night and not Rasmus Sandin, who, you know, appeared to be the eighth on their depth chart. So, you know, it looks to me as though if they do get to a point in the series, probably wouldn't be at this stage or maybe even later in the playoffs where they're making a defenseman change. It might be Marincin coming in rather than Sandin. But as I say, I don't think that we're going to get line combinations this afternoon that look exactly the same, be it at forward or defense. I think that there'll be a little bit of juggling here, and you know, we start a little bit of that interplay where they've got some evidence. I mean, remember, these teams hadn't played each other since October. It was a long time between meaningful games for both of them, but it's a long time before they've even seen each other on the same ice sheet, and now kind of the chess match begins.
Berkey.
I think, CJ, one thing that fans probably don't appreciate is that Columbus finished with identical points, or they're 1 point apart, whatever it was, neck and neck with the Toronto Maple Leafs in terms of regular season to the pause, and lost 400 man games to key players. Like, they didn't lose Brian Burks, they lost good players. And is that disconcerting? You saw their full lineup. They put in some kids. Well, Robinson's not really a kid, but they put in Foodie and Robinson to add for their foot speed. Is that concerning?
I think that there's some concern there for sure. I mean, you know, just having Seth Jones back, you know, he was injured for the last stretch of play before the pause kicked in. And, you know, he looked so good last night, as you guys were talking about off the top. You know, being able to play him and Werenski as much as they do is a benefit, I think. You know, while they didn't break through on their two power play opportunities, that those two, you know, offer a pretty good look and have a fair amount of freedom in the system that the Blue Jackets want them to play. I mean, we saw them both jumping up in the rush. It's funny because, you know, we're typifying how we're talking about how structurally sound the Blue Jackets are and how they like to lock things down, but they look for those offensive opportunities with those two players in particular. And so, you know, had the series come around in April when Seth Jones may or may not have been at 100%. You know, I think it's a different kind of look. So, you know, no team probably had as tough a road as the Blue Jackets this year. I think after losing some prime time free agents, and I know that internally they kind of pushed off the talk about, you know, the significance of losing the Panarin, the Bobrovsky, even Matt Duchene. But, you know, they gave away a fair bit in high-end skill. And then on top of that, you know, had their depth tested to a degree most teams don't in a season, and still wound up with the exact same record as a team like the Leafs, you know, which have much bigger names and more high-profile players. So, you know, it does speak to me to a team that's built to grind games out in the playoffs, and certainly, you know, what we saw in Game 1 was what I would expect. If anything, I'm just surprised how well, how quickly that they were able to get to that game. You know, I wondered, with so much time off, you know, teams that are really relying on systems-based play rather than just talent or skill, you know, how quickly they would be able to find their rhythm. And the Blue Jackets, to me, didn't look like that was their first meaningful game since March. I mean, that was pretty well organized. And yes, there's the odd look for the Leafs, but as you mentioned earlier, Berkey, just not enough to you know, break that game open.
CJ, this time of year, when we see a player who kind of inexplicably just doesn't have that zest, we say, well, long season, maybe he's hurt. You know, it could be just nagging injuries, wear of the season, whatever. When we see it last night and in the exhibition games, it's easy to go, well, maybe he wasn't in great shape after the 4 months off. Maybe he wasn't able to train the same way. Is there Are you hearing that about anyone in particular? And I'm not going to ask for any names or anything, but it doesn't sound like teams are saying, yeah, we've got this guy or that guy we got to protect because he's in terrible shape. I'll be honest, I'm answering this because Mitch Marner was just like, there was no zest to his game last night, but I'm just asking a question on more of a general scale.
Well, it's funny with Mitch specifically, you know, what I heard from him is that, you know, I think that the Leafs were expecting a big playoffs from him, that, you know, that they feel that he showed a lot during the period of time, you know, during the pause, in terms of the work he put in terms of the leadership role he took on when they were doing the small group workouts, even just organizing some off-ice activities when everyone came back to town early. I mean, I think that there's a lot expected of Mitch. And so, you know, I don't think there's specific concern, you know, with him or what's been seen of him during the break, but, you know, that's out there. And it's funny because during playoff time, you know, there's inevitably a star player on a marquee team that isn't producing at a level you'd expect. And, you know, they usually take a fair bit of heat in the course of the analysis of the series. And I'm always a little hesitant because then the series ends and you find out he had a punctured lung and a torn ACL or something. And then they're playing through just incredible injuries. I mean, we don't have that this time. And so I think that, you know, as maybe we get more of a sample size than just a game or a couple games, you know, we might start to wonder about conditioning or the impact that the pause had on certain guys, because, you know, I'm sure, I mean, as we know, even just anecdotally from our friends, some people made use of the time in the pandemic to, you know, try to better themselves, and others, you know, look, mental health is an issue during this time. I know it was a very difficult period for a lot of people. I don't think athletes would be exempted from that. And you know, some guys just might not have had access either to the ice early enough or, you know, the proper weight equipment, gym equipment that they're used to and, you know, might have suffered for all this time off. But, you know, I haven't heard a lot of specific concerns. It seems as though everyone's trying to find the, you know, when I talk to, you know, people that work for teams, that they're trying to find the sunny side of this. If they have a veteran team, they're saying this is great. We, you know, our older guys are getting rested right before the playoffs. They come back right at the playoffs. Those with younger rosters seem to think that that'll be an advantage because, you know, those players' bodies, you know, are maybe a little bit better at bouncing back from this. And, you know, we're all just getting used to this right now. And you know, the Leafs feel as though conditioning should be their advantage. So we'll see how that plays out as the series goes along.
Quick update, by the way. Carolina is playing the New York Rangers right now. Andrei Svechnikov has just scored 1-0 Carolina. They have a 1-0 series lead. A particular note in this one, Henrik Lundqvist does get the start. Again, Igor Shesterkin unfit to play. So that storyline continues. Back to the Maple Leafs quickly. I want to get your thoughts on Nick Robertson. You guys referenced the early scoring chance yesterday and how different a game it is. Nick Robertson, to me, whether it was the exhibition game against the Montreal Canadiens or even yesterday, I find gives enough protein to people that like him and also people that aren't fans of his game with this team. And yesterday's game was a perfect example of it. Has the early scoring chance, and you think, that's the, you know, more skill. That's what any NHL team needs. And then later in the game, you see the forecheck, and I think it was Vladislav Gavrikov. He gets caught up in the boards and ends up getting absolutely flattened and physically manhandled. And those that say that there's, you know, too much soft skill in this lineup, there's some protein for them. Look, here's a kid that's getting too young and is getting physically manhandled. Where is CJ at, rather, on Nick Robertson?
I've been fascinated by this decision, Jeff. You know, one thing I always say is, you know, having been around teams that are making a call on an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old, you know, often it feels as though the coaching staff or the management group is looking for reasons not to play that player, you know, that they're looking for evidence that he's not ready. And it felt to me a lot through this camp, just the way, you know, Sheldon Keefe in particular talked about Robertson, that they were finding reasons to like him. And that's not to say that there aren't obvious reasons to like him, but I think that they, you know, really were trying to find his best qualities and, you know, envision that in the lineup. And you know, I think it's as simple as this, that chance he had last night, they would rather that be on his stick than someone like Pierre Engvall or Frederik Gauthier or, you know, one of the other options they have among that bottom six forward group. And, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with that line of thinking, you know, even though he didn't bury that one. But, you know, given how much, you know, he scored in the OHL, you know, he definitely has an NHL shot. I have no doubts about that, having watched that training camp. The Leafs just came through pretty closely. I mean, the question is, can he handle the rest of the ice? Can he put himself in positions to get that shot off enough, you know, where it pays off? And I think, you know, really, he's at least ninth forward right now. They're counting on a lot of other guys to carry the load offensively, but they see him as someone who can deliver a big goal at a point during these playoffs. And so, you know, I don't mind the call. I think it's a little bit gutsy to put him in there. But, you know, I didn't see anything in that game to me that would make me say he has to come out. You know, one of the interesting subplots, and it's far from the storyline coming out of that game, is I think Alexander Kerfoot actually has looked really good in both the exhibition game and the game last night. And you know, he was a guy during the season I just had a tough time at, you know, getting a read on at times. I don't know if that was a matter of him coming over to a new team. He had, you know, kind of a brutal face injury early in the year, you know, a coaching change, you know, maybe Nick just didn't quite find his rhythm and has felt more comfortable in returning after this break. But, you know, I think that you have to count on other players to help a guy like Robertson if he's going to play in the lineup. And, you know, I think the bet really boils down to if he gets more looks like that one, if he's close to the home plate area with a shot, that he's more likely to score than a lot of the other options they could have to play on that third line.
Berkey.
Yeah, my objection, CJ, isn't I like Nick Robertson. He's going to be a really good player. And what you said is true. He's a better offensive option, and they need other people to pull on that rope. He can't be their first option to put them in play. But to me, it's like making a cake. You look at the recipe and say, what ingredients can we put in this cake that give us the best chance to win? And to me, they looked small last night. They looked very small last night. And they had trouble with the speed. They had trouble with the forecheck. I love the player. I just don't know if that's the right mix. But they're going to have to decide that, and they're going to have to decide that quickly.
Fair. And look, you know, Engvall is a man. He's a very big human. He's in great shape. He skates well. You know, he doesn't have the hands. But, you know, you might look at it the other way and say, you're right. You put him out there, and you can grind against the Blue Jackets a little bit more. It's more of a maybe a death by a thousand cuts kind of philosophy that, you know, yes, that player might individually be less likely to score, but maybe more is happening on the ice during his shifts that help over the course of the game or the course of a series to open up chances for, you know, for the top lines. And I think the one nice thing about a player like Robertson is that even if they do take him out, I do see him as an option you can sort of plug in for a little excitement. You know, obviously he's a young kid. He's pretty fired up to be there. It seems as though everyone sort of, you know, gravitated around him a little bit. And you know, I don't think he would be too disappointed, for example. It's not a controversial decision by any stretch if they do take him out, and you would always have that option to put him back in at some point if you need a spark.
What are your thoughts on, I guess, scapegoats and the Maple Leafs defense? You know, if you go on Twitter, Cody Ceci gets beat on pretty bad. There's a faction of the public who thinks that Tyson Barry is the root of all evil. But if the Leafs do want to make a change on the back end, which of those guys can you see sort of having some time taken away or maybe, you know, pushed up the lineup? If they do, in fact, bring someone else in, what happens with those guys, those two guys in particular?
You know, it's such a tough call for me. I don't love the mix on the blue line. I mean, it's no secret that this is probably still if not an Achilles heel, it certainly is an area that it's not a strength for the Leafs. And you know, they just don't have a Jones-Werenski type of players. I think, you know, certainly you can expect a little better of Muzzin and Hall than they showed in the early part of that game last night. But, you know, I don't know who would come out. I mean, we haven't seen all year a period where that group of six was all healthy together, at least not for a meaningful amount of time. And so, you know, I don't really get a feel for where that change would come. You know, it's not as though CeCe was scratched at any point or Barry was. And so, you know, I see if anything, you know, Dermott maybe moving up to take some of those minutes. You know, maybe as strange as it sounds, you end up with CeCe and Barry on the third pairing, you know, although they're both right shots. You know, I just feels as though that mix isn't quite, it's certainly something the Leafs have to work around rather than viewing as a strength, I believe. And so, you know, it's going to be tough. I think they certainly need more starting from Muzzin and Hall because, you know, they're just relying on those guys so much as a matchup pairing and, you know, sprinkle the others in because let's face it, it's more of an offensive leaning defense core and, you know, they don't want to be spending too much time on their own end with those players on the ice.
If Peter Mrazek, by the way, just robbed Brett Howden point blank. The score there remains 1-0. Carolina leading the New York Rangers at Scotiabank right now. Final question for you, CJ. Off the Maple Leaf page, what was the big story for you over the weekend? Whether it's Tkachuk, whether it's Habs Hawks, what is it? What's CJ's number one story?
I would say probably Habs Hawks, if you want to throw Arizona in there. Just the fact you had, you know, the 12 seeds and an 11 seed come in and win these games. I mean, you know, let's face it, 1986 is the last time these best of fives were played. I'm not a young guy, but I don't remember that point of the world. So, you know, for most of us hockey fans, we're seeing this concept for the first time, you know, that aren't paying attention to the AHL anyways. And so, you know, I think that the fact that after all this time off, you know, a few of the teams, you know, I had the Penguins to win in three, you know, and many people on Twitter joyed in pointing that out after, you know, Jeff Petrie scored the other night and overtime for the Habs. So, you know, to me, that the storyline of the first couple of days of the playoffs has just been, who knows what we're going to get out of this, you know, I think especially the best of five round before teams really settle in and start to feel completely comfortable. And, you know, it feels like the normal playoffs. I think we have the possibility here for some pretty interesting results, some things that are going to get people angry about the return to play format that came about. And then obviously in really not that long from now, a week or so, we're going to have a lottery for, you know, Lafreniere with, you know, potentially some of these fairly top teams. If, you know, if Pittsburgh were to lose or Edmonton were to lose, the Leafs were to lose, you know, teams that really wouldn't have been in the hunt for him are going to have a 12.5% chance. And I'm sure Twitter will take that in lockstep really quietly and calmly too.
Which team would enrage Twitter the most if they win the Alexi Lafreniere sweepstakes?
Edmonton. It's got to be Edmonton, just with the number of number one overall picks they've had. I mean, I don't mean to pick on them. I know it's played out over 10 years, but you know, I think they've already had four number ones in a decade. If they got a fifth, I'm sure Twitter would be on fire. Or the Leafs. I mean, just because it's easy to hate
Toronto.
The Leafs.
It's, yeah, that's a two-foot putt.